Hey friends, mark your calendars. The Intentional Motherhood Retreat is coming up October 23rd through 25th in Portland, Oregon. It's a meaningful few days to slow down, connect, and refocus on what matters most in your motherhood journey. Also, some exciting news, Intentional Fatherhood has officially launched on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. So go subscribe, check out the first few episodes, and share it with all the fathers in your life. For more details and registration info for the Motherhood Retreat, you can go to intentionalparents.org, or you can go check out our new website for fathers, intentionalfatherhood.org. You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. Before we get into today's episode, I want to introduce you to today's guest. Today's guest is very close to Elizabeth and I's heart. We love him very much and are very close to him. And we're talking, of course, about John Mark Comer, Elizabeth's brother, my brother-in-law and dear friend, and we've known each other for many, many years. Just recently, we sat down with John Mark in his home in Malibu, California, and we were able to talk about so many different dynamics of faith, walking with Jesus, being a parent in our time, what it looks like to be a Jesus follower in our time. As you know, if you haven't already heard, John Mark released an amazing book called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry a while back. Live No Lies was the book right after that, and most recently, Practicing the Way. And so I really encourage you, if you haven't read any of his books, my goodness, do it. You need to make sure that you read these books. But truly, this conversation is not only long, it's a gift. It's a really, really incredible gift. So make sure to listen through to the end. If you haven't had a chance to rate or subscribe to the podcast, please do that. That helps immensely. We're also on YouTube now. You can subscribe there as we drop new episodes every single week, and you can watch the whole episode there. But with all that said, please enjoy today's conversation with John Mark Comer. Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Today we are in someone else's home. It's a lot nicer. This is a much easier place to film in. The aesthetics are great. And if you can't see, we are in Senor, as I call him, John Mark Comer's home. Welcome to the podcast, John Mark.
It's great to be with you. It's been a while.
Actually, I realized, was it in 2019 was the last time we had you on?
It was in my office up in Portland.
It was in Portland. It was a long time ago. Lots has happened since then. Mm-hmm. Lots has happened. This is fun for us, primarily because before you're John Mark as an author, people probably know you from that space or from Practicing the Way or from pastoring in Bridgetown and all that. For us, you're John Mark. And
Uncle Johnny.
And Uncle Johnny.
And your beats.
And yeah. Weird nickname. And
people do not need to know that.
No. But the evolution they do need to know about. So where did that name come from? Because didn't you give it to her?
Came from my childhood trauma.
No, I just refused to give it up as she tries to become this sophisticated, beautiful adult, wise person. I'm like, no, you are Beats.
You are Beats.
No, it originated with you. Do you remember this?
My six-year-old sister who was a tattletale.
I was.
Like nobody's business.
Have you met yourself and Rebecca, though? Like, how was I supposed to exist with the two of you?
What do you mean? I was a good kid.
I was not intense.
A good big brother, though.
Yeah.
You become a good big brother.
It just took a while.
You are a great big brother.
So where did Beats come from? I think it was from Elizabeth. This is a classic Phil Comerism.
Yes.
I think it went from Elizabeth to Elizabethan.
No, it started with Elizabethan. You were like in eighth grade studying the Elizabethan era.
Had to have been. Oh, yeah.
I'm 5 years younger.
You would have been kindergarten.
If people didn't pick up yet, John Mark and Elizabeth are brother and sister and Phil and Diane's oldest son. So I'm sure you picked that up. But now, so keep going.
The oldest of four. Comers keep getting better. So
Matthew is amazing.
I'm second to best.
Certainly the worst.
Matthew, though, is.
They weren't even working out their theory of parenting on me. They were just
surviving.
Learning.
I will say when we talk on the podcast, they probably share stories, not on purpose, but about you more often because they're the best examples of what they did wrong, of all the things that they figured. Like, I mean, it's very true.
Oh, they were great parents, but I'm a bit of a mess. I was studying the Elizabethan age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you started calling me Elizabethan.
Oh,
And then it got shortened to Beethen. And then Beaten stuck around for a while.
And then
Beats. And I've not been able to shake it.
And it's been 30 years. And thank you. You've kept it this whole time. Good job. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I still get
you actually, will always be Beats in my phone.
Yeah.
Is she still Beats in your phone?
Of course.
It's so it's so funny when I forget that you guys call her that. And then it comes back every time. It's just very quick.
Well, to the intentional podcast world and all of digital Christendom, I reintroduce you to Beats.
Beats.
Not Beats Moser, not just Beats.
Period.
You want to know what is also like kind of a cruel joke? Not cruel. I actually have grown in my compassion towards you because I am raising a mini you.
That is true.
I've always like had flashbacks of my childhood when he does certain things because there's so many similarities. He's different than you, but there's a lot of similarities. And a couple days ago, what were we doing? We were like watching a movie or something.
Yeah.
He's upstairs and I hear him call downstairs to Birdie and Sloan with this like kind of sweet voice, kind of annoyed voice. He wanted them to like, he wanted to take a shower.
That sounds
so
like
he
me.
Calls down the stairs. He's like, hey girls, are you guys going to brush your teeth? Because I'm really wanting to take a shower. And no joke, I look at Brooke.
Yeah, she did.
Said that sounded exactly like John Mark when he's like a little bit annoyed, but trying to be nice.
It's like I try to be nice and it just comes out laced with contempt.
Yeah.
That is.
Well, my son is following suit.
You're a wonderful individual.
I would love to say I have evolved out of that, but.
Well, at least there was like a nice tone to his voice that sounded you.
I think it's like, I mean, but what else can we hope for? Like, you are actually annoyed. So, I mean, that's the truth.
Yeah.
And you're choosing to be nice. Like, I think that's a win. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think we have to be a little bit gentle with the reality that they're
trying. It's true. Spiritual realism.
It's true.
All about it.
Now, I do want to say you just written a book. Well, I mean, you've wrote it a long time ago, but at this point, it's come out recently, more recently.
Yes.
Practicing the Way, which is such an incredible book. I do want to say that book's probably been something you've been writing for a while, is my guess, meaning writing it over the last 20 or so years in the sense of your heart and desire.
My first research, I mean, it's hard to tell when you start writing a book.
Yeah.
Because your whole life goes into a book and it's a snapshot of your thinking. There's the actual, you know, moment when you sit down with a blank Word doc and start to type. But writing a book starts years or decades before that, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, my first research file though was 2010.
Really?
So it was definitely like, you know, 13 years or so of intentional lead up to it.
I knew it. I just had a sense.
Mm.
We want to let you know about a new offering, a 31-day prayer devotional entitled Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth. This book was born out of desperation. I didn't know how to lead my kids spiritually, so I started praying, honest, dependent, daily prayers. Jeremiah 29:12 says, "Then you will call on me, God says, and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you." If you want to learn more, head to intentionalparents.org. And if you partner with us at $25 a month or more, we'd love to send you a copy as a thank you.
But I do want to say about that. I think because between, I think the last time we even chatted in this space, I think Ruthless Elimination of Hurry was just coming out, which has been such a helpful book for so many people. Live No Lies was between that and then this current one. So we have definitely missed a couple of books, but all of those books have been very helpful and transformational for many.
Not my son. We do it. I know. As we're filming this, it's first week of summer vacation.
So
we make our kids do an hour every morning of college reading. And so I sat down with him 2 days ago. I was like, all right, here's your five options you can read. Screwtape Letters or Coddling the American Mind by Jonathan Haidt.
Good book.
Or Brave New World by Huxley. Or How to Be a High School Superstar by Cal Newport. And you need to read one of my books because this is like what I do for a living and it's paying for your life. So
you should probably know what I do.
You should know what your dad is doing. You pick which one. And so Sunday did not want to read my books. So she took Brave New World. and she's off to the races. And Moses started reading Live No Lies. And all he has said this morning was that it was really boring.
This is my favorite part. I went downstairs to go grab something and he had your book in his hand. And I was like, oh, is dad making you read his book? Like, just because Moses is probably, if you've had the privilege to meet Moses.
It's quite a privilege.
He's one of the most uniquely perfect, like uniquely himself individual. There's no one like him in the world. But what I loved is he just immediately, because he snaps back so quick, he's like, yeah, you know, I'm just trying to figure out what dad does. He didn't go into the details of college. He's just like, yeah, you know, I figure I should know.
Robert, have you ever read Iron John by Robert Bly?
No.
He's fascinating. He was a 70s secular progressive poet who wrote this book on masculinity. It's where Richard Rohr and a bunch of people got all of their stuff was originally from him.
What's his name again?
Say Robert Bly.
Okay.
He was a 70s kind of intellectual poet. And he wrote this book on masculinity that is not remotely alt-right. He was a progressive. And it was fascinating. He roots the crisis of masculinity not in the feminism movement, which he was all for, but in the Industrial Revolution and in dads leaving the home. Mm. And he has this really unique, like, psychological take where he thinks that what happened when that families used to work together, running a farm, yeah, and the kids absolutely. And the parents would all work together, and there'd be, you know, division of labor based on body size and,
but the whole family,
you know, if you're
worked.
Pregnant and stuff.
Yeah.
But the whole family would be working together. And you would see what your parents did, and what they did was more like dad is out planting a field or mom is out, you know, whatever, tending the garden. And, but he said in the Industrial Revolution, dad left home, which left one, the boys in the care of women from a young age, mm-hmm. and women are lovely, but boys need to be around men to become a man.
Yeah.
And he said it left them not knowing what their dad does. And he said that actually creates, and he had some sophisticated psychology for it, it creates resentment between fathers and sons when sons are not around their dads and they don't know what they do for work. So one of his pieces of advice was, it's really important if you're a dad and you work a job outside the home that your kids know what you do. So I'll like bring my kids with, I don't travel much anymore, but I'll bring my kids with me when I travel and we'll be on the airplane. And inevitably it's like you get to a point in the flight where 98% of the people are all watching a movie and I never have time to do that, almost never. And so I'll always like nudge my kids and I'll make them pause their movie or homework or whatever. Totally. I'm like, look up, every single screen you see is on a movie. Look at your dad. I'm writing this teaching that I'm flying to London to give, or I'm finishing this chapter, or I'm doing these emails for work, whatever. And I just want you to see what I'm doing.
Yes.
Because otherwise I'm just like.
That is fascinating.
Well, otherwise to them,
because I mean,
just
what do you
absent.
Do? You just sit in front of a laptop and type and they don't know what you do.
Well, that's what our girls actually, they had this little toy laptop they got for, it's like a little one that they can type on. They got for Christmas a while ago. And Sloan grabbed it and said, okay, dad, I'm going to work. And all she was doing was holding a laptop. And I was like, is that what you think I do? I walk around holding laptops. And I mean, it's,
you're like, I have a microphone too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a cup of coffee.
Dad pushes record on stuff. This finger, like we push things.
I have to say, yes, I've written several books that have been not very effective with my children.
So. But I mean, dude.
But effective in a lot of other people's lives.
Yeah.
Sure.
And, sure. But no, thank you. You have been a huge gift and a gift to Elizabeth and I. And of course,
I love you guys so much.
Well, similar to the tone in your voice where there is, you know, you're maybe annoyed, but you're trying to be kind. I know that you're in touch with where you can improve and grow, but you've blessed a lot of people. And I think it's incredible how you have done so many, so much of that work when you're sitting on a plane has actually turned into fruit to help people. So thank you for being committed to that, because a lot of people don't.
Same to you. This is really important work you guys are doing and the work of others that you are highlighting. And parenting, man, it is not for the faint of heart. I don't know if anybody feels good at parenting unless if they are either like top 1% or just not self-aware.
It also doesn't.
Wouldn't that be kind of nice sometimes?
Oh, man.
I actually told her the other day, I said,
what's Jim Lundy? What's his thing? Denial is the most effective and popular coping mechanism there is because it works better.
Well, he said effective. Know. Yeah, I think effective. I remember because I naturally can. Not denial, but basically distraction. And he just basically said, yeah, it's really effective, isn't it? And I was like, Yeah. And he's like, so, I mean, yeah, don't use it all the time, but when you're really overwhelmed, it's not that bad of a thing. I was mm-hmm. like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So, well, I did want to say thank you for all that, not just the content, but we get to, you know, as we're even sitting in your home, we get to just sit with you and know all the sides of you. And one of my favorite things about knowing you for so many years is you truly are, yes, aware of where you can improve. My sweet wife, your sister, has that same wonderful gift to just look at all the things that she can grow in. And that's really hard to live in sometimes. And so I know that you're aware of the areas you need to grow, but I do appreciate the level of integrity that you have that nobody sees. I get a window into. You are really actually who you say you are. And that's a huge gift. And there's a lot of people in this space that aren't always maybe in living in that space. And so we did want to talk about some of the details around the book. I think there were so many great concepts and so much that overlap with us as individuals, but also as parents. If you're married, any stage of life, I think it really is helpful. So I did want to cover a couple of things. Was there anything else before we jumped into some of the questions that we had?
Anything, Sis, about just a unique, awesome trait about me that you want to point out for your listeners?
Oh man, where do I start? Actually, okay, another funny story. Our kids have started cleaning up the kitchen at night.
Oh, yeah. We're a little later.
I know.
It's great.
I know.
Welcome to a new era in family life.
It's great.
But again, I will listen from upstairs and relive my childhood as Duke is managing all the different workers mm-hmm. and making sure that he doesn't have to do any of the jobs that he doesn't want to do.
Smart man.
He does hand out the jobs he hates.
True eldest child.
No, but to highlight what Brooke just said, it feels like a gift as a sibling to see the work you're doing in the world, to listen to your podcast interviews. I was telling you before we recorded, I listened to your latest interview on the Typology podcast with Ian Cron. And I was so proud of you, knowing who you are since you were little, and was so proud of listening to you, and you were so honest and raw and humble about your shadow side, basically, and about the areas that God is still forming in you, which of anybody I know who has devoted his life to spiritual formation, not just writing about it, but living it, the fact that you have become more humble, not less, and that we can truly say, I mean, Brooke says it to anybody who is, we get a lot of conversations with your fans who they're really excited to meet us because they follow all of your work, which is beautiful. I love it. And we can both emphatically say he's exactly who you would think he is.
Yeah.
And that's a gift as your sister and in a culture where that is really not always true. You know, what's the saying of like, don't meet your heroes, they'll disappoint you.
Yeah.
You know, that is not true of you. And I'm just grateful to call you my brother.
Thanks,
I want to ask a question that people, I think will segue.
I work hard to be vulnerable in my teachings, and people, as much as you can, sometimes you can't talk about certain things because they involve other people that should not honor them. But people are always like, you're not as bad as you make yourself sound. And I'm always like, no, I am actually quite a bit worse. It's like what I'm saying, but worse.
Oh, gosh.
Important. I remember, you know, when T was pregnant with Jude, I had such a great, you know, childhood experience, but I started to have real fear. I wasn't scared to be a dad as much. I should have been, now in hindsight. but I was scared because I was a pastor, and there, at least at the time, was a really bad reputation, like for pastors' kids.
Oh, yeah.
And that never made sense to me. That's not, you know, the four of us kids have our issues, but we're all following Jesus. And it was odd to me because I know that parenting isn't formulaic. And even in a hypothetical universe where you do everything right, which is a hypothetical world, does not exist. But imagine a hypothetical world where you do everything right. Your children have agency and still could go wildly off the rails or not in the right direction. So I know it's not formulaic, but you would think like population bell curve dispersal that, you know, good things would happen, at least disproportionately, that you'd see pastor's kids do well.
Yeah.
And so I was so scared. Why is that not the case? And, I went around and asked a bunch of older, wiser mentors, why is that?
Yeah.
And I had a few theories of what they would say. It's the stress, it's the criticism, it's the long hours. No, they all gave the exact same answer right away. And they said, it's hypocrisy.
Yes.
And when mom and dad are one person on stage and another person at home, it just does something to eat away at the heart. And that's not to say that if you know a pastor and their kid's not following Jesus, the pastor is a hypocrite. Again, it's not formulaic.
Yeah.
But I think it did burn into me a fear of God, like, oh man, I really need to be as close to the exact same person on stage as I am in every room. And it's hard because, you know, you tend to be your best self when you're preaching and your worst self when you're at home.
Getting ready to preach.
Getting ready to preach or after preaching, you know. Yeah. So such is life. Man. What can I say?
You are enjoying content brought to you by Intentional, a crowdfunded nonprofit that desires to help families and marriages all around the world in the area of discipleship and spiritual formation. This offering is completely free thanks to the generosity of our growing community of legacy builders. Legacy Builders is a group of people from all over the world that gives monthly to fuel this dream that we have in our hearts of seeing discipleship to Jesus in the family become a way of life. A monthly gift of $5, $10, or even $30 can continue to fuel this ministry forward. Our dream is to invite people like you to join and partner with us at a financial level and to see this work integrated into families. So as you listen to this podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us? Would you allow the Spirit to lead you, even if it's just a few dollars a month? Thank you so much. And may the Spirit of Jesus give you wisdom, clarity, and joy as you pray about joining us. If you want to join today, go to intentionalparents.org and click on Give.
We had one of those weeks. We were teaching on Sunday, and the week heading up to it, it was hard. I mean, all to say, just to relate with you in very real time, let's just say Saturday was a day of just deep repentance all around.
Apologies
to the kids.
Well, because we were teaching on parenting, and all four of our kids were going to be there. It's like, oh my gosh, we've got to make some
most of the time when we teach on these topics, our kids aren't always present, but we also, they know what we teach on. But you talk about this concept of no accidental saints. I would love to talk about that.
I tried to name the book that.
You did.
Ooh. It did not work.
I didn't know that.
Apparently you don't want a negative in a book title, so I'm told by smart people.
Oh, that would grab my attention.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was a great title. No accidental saints.
I like that.
Yeah, I would have
to. But it made it in the book still.
It is.
And it grabbed my attention.
A good one-liner. There it is.
It is.
So talk to us about this concept, because I mean, obviously, in one sense, it's broad, it's maybe easy to understand, but it's so much deeper than that.
Yes.
So
100%.
Where'd that come from?
Yeah, I think a key idea for me is that another line in there is Christlikeness is natural, is possible, but it's not natural.
Yes.
Meaning, I think there's an assumption that comes out of a previous cultural moment, you could call it Christendom, that has a low value for discipleship, a kind of Western understanding of salvation that is incredibly truncated down to this, like, there's this legal change in your status with God, and now you're going to heaven when you die, which is, I guess, technically true, but is, I mean, just a sliver of what Jesus means and Paul means by the word salvation. And in that kind of older rubric, there's this kind of this assumption that you just kind of go to church and slide along through life and you become, you know, you grow and mature. And honestly, in a lot of Western and particularly evangelical, that stream of the church, there's not even really an emphasis on what you could call formation or spiritual maturity or discipleship or becoming a person who's deeply mature. Much less a really healthy mechanism for how to travel that path. So I think a key idea with the book is I think we both need to raise our horizon of possibility, like raise the bar of the level of change that is possible on one hand. So, you know, the word transformation in the New Testament is metamorphao in Greek, where our English word metamorphosis comes from, which is the, you know, it's a word picture for how a butterfly goes into the pupa and becomes, I'm sorry, caterpillar goes into the pupa and becomes a butterfly. Mm-hmm. And that's like the word picture for transformation. It's mm-hmm. like, that's a significant level yes. of change. It's yes. a change. Like, you know, one lexicon I read said it's a change in the essential form or nature of an organism.
Yeah.
Yes.
So transformation, when you're reading about that or formation, or there's different words in the New Testament that are all kind of based in this Greek word, metamorpho, we're not talking about like people just cuss less and like no. go to church and
or a little less angry,
tuck
maybe?
Their shirt in. Yeah. yeah. I mean, you're talking about deep, essential level change. That's possible. So on one hand, like, I think we need to raise our horizon of possibility, you mm. know, to the level of change that's possible. On the other hand, I think we have, so I think a lot of Western Christians have too low a view of kind of what's possible for transformation and way too high a view of like, what just going to church and using willpower and Bible study, which are both all great things, but to change will actually accomplish.
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to, I think kind of the driving question of my life would be, how do people change? And I have a vested interest in that question.
Yeah.
So I'm asking first for myself and secondly for others. And how do we change in this cultural moment with iPhones and
yeah.
podcasts and the internet and busyness and cities and lives and when we're trying just to parent our kids? These are like the defining questions of my life. You know, we all live from questions.
Yeah.
And I think that's a beautiful thing. And so, yeah, so I think a key idea in the book would be that something approximating Christ-likeness,
yeah.
Christ expressed through your gender, personality matrix, Enneagram number, ethnicity, family of origin, all yeah. job, like part of the world, something approximating Christ expressed through you is possible in this lifetime. Mm. But it will not just happen if you just kind of go through life. I think this is the great lie that there was enough Christendom in America, at least, that people could believe this lie, and now it's gone. And it was that if you can kind of live like a normal American
yeah.
and just kind of put in a Jesus thing over the top of it, and that'll work. And that simply,
it doesn't work,
no. First off, you probably won't even stay a Christian anymore because mm-hmm. the cultural current is so strong in the other yeah. direction. But you certainly, the cultural forces outside us and inside us that are deforming us are mm-hmm. so strong right now mm. that we really need a thoughtful, intentional, relational, spiritual approach toward yes. growth, you know? So I'm trying to lay that on the book yes. in a way that's just yeah. easy to read and yes. not too intimidating and rooted in scripture and Jesus and the gospel.
You did it. You did it. Like, I kept telling him, because I read it before he did, and I kept telling him, he's putting words to everything that is my lived experience, especially at this point in my journey. Like, you know, being raised in the same era of the church, we all were. Mm-hmm. Where there was a lot of like, you just do these things and you go to church and you read your Bible more. And that was kind of it. Like, and the older I've gotten, the more I see, the more aware I am of the areas that need to grow and change.
Yes.
And that they're not just going to, they do the opposite of change. They actually get worse. Like, if I'm not intentionally doing things that are going to help form me in the direction that I want to be formed.
Yes.
You know? And I think, now we can clearly see that that quote unquote formula, whatever it was, didn't work. And I think at least for my generation of parents, a lot of them are left confused and asking the question, okay, well, how do I change and grow? But a lot of people, they're asking when they've got a bunch of little kids in their home.
Yes.
Which
is not a space of life where you have like,
it's not a monk style
no.
life.
You have a ton of margin to just, you know,
think about the deep things of Jesus and how he wants to form you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the pain is like, I mean, the half truth there is that older formula for discipleship that you and I grew up with.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, at a pragmatic level is basically go to church on Sunday mm-hmm. and every morning read the Bible mm-hmm. and pray, read the Bible, meaning read the Bible in a year, and pray, meaning petition, intercession. And then, you know, maybe tithe on top of it, which are all, by the way, great
all
things.
Great
I
things.
Do all of that today. Yeah. But that formula, the reason it's a half truth is because it does work pretty well, like early on in the spiritual journey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you think a lot of people are really resistant, and maybe for good reason, but to thinking about spiritual formation through kind of a life arc and mm-hmm. stages or whatever. But certainly there are varying levels of spiritual maturity and yeah. godliness, whatever you want to call it. And in those earlier levels, stages, runs around the circle, whatever you want to call it, that formula does get you quite a ways down the road. Mm-hmm. And then you get stuck. Mm-hmm. And you quickly reach a spot, you know, evangelicalism in particular, which I'm both deeply indebted to and really trying to grow beyond, was based on the false assumption that as a person's knowledge of the Bible increases, their spiritual maturity will increase along with it.
Yeah.
And the reason that myth still lives in the church is because it's mostly true early in the spiritual journey. Mm. So like if you mm-hmm. come to, especially now, like where like the cultural assumptions are so far yes. from yeah. the New Testament assumptions yeah. about what is good, beautiful, and true. And it's like we're living in the Isaiah line, like where people call good evil and evil good.
Yeah.
So when you first, like we had just, T and I have been hanging out with a few brand new Christians, not even baptized yet, with zero Christian background from different parts of the world. I mean, just... No, it's so invigorating.
I was going to say, it's probably refreshing.
Oh, yes, it's so invigorating. Yes, it's really life-giving. Yeah, I mean, the conversations we have are, I have to discipline myself not to laugh, not because they're silly or bad, just because it's like, oh, wow, we're, yes. you know, yeah. it's like
we're
this.
At this stage.
And for them and for others who are brand new Christians coming out of LA or wherever you are in the world, your mental maps to reality that you navigate sex and money and relationships and marriage and parenting and career, all this gender, all this stuff by are wildly off. And so mm-hmm. they're opening your life to damage. Mm-hmm. As you read the Bible, one of the most important things that all people should do and new Christians should do obsessively is read scripture, memorize yeah. scripture, study scripture, listen to podcasts on Bible teaching every single day, just immerse your mind and scripture. And that's, you know, a good lifelong discipline, but especially early in the journey. It's why you meet so many new Christians and without anybody ever telling them, they'll come to you and be like, yeah, I listen to 5 sermons a day. Yeah. Like, how do you even have yes. a job or a yeah. life? And they're like, yeah. every commute,
just
every load of laundry, yeah. every run, they're just like, listen, I'm listening to this person, and this Bible study and that. Yeah. And I think that is the Spirit of God stirring that in their heart. Like, yeah. you need this. You need new mental maps to reality.
Yeah.
And so as your mind slowly but surely, and this takes place over many years often, begins to like remap to the cartography of Jesus around what is good and beautiful and true, and as you begin to take on Jesus' mental maps, you begin to just intuitively live differently, mm-hmm. right? Because you start to believe new things about yeah. what's good, beautiful, and true. And that is transformative. But then what happens is you reach another stage, and this is an oversimplification, where your problem is not that you don't know the right destination or even the right route to get there. Mm-hmm. It's that you cannot walk the path. Mm-hmm. And at that point, all of this kind of preaching and teaching and Bible study, good things that we continue to do because we need nourishment in our soul, just like we continue to eat. But those things don't have the same effect they used to. So mm-hmm. very pragmatically, the problems that I'm solving for, I'm not that mature. The problems that the three of us are solving for as parents are probably not going to be solved by a really good exegetical teaching through the second half of Ephesians.
Not even close.
You know, and not to say that's not good and important.
Yeah.
No, but you're right.
But I know what I need to do at some yes. level with like the kind of dad I want to be. My problem is I can't do it. I have a body yeah. of sin that in that moment of emotional dysregulation when my kid yeah. triggers me, sets me Ooh. Off, does the darnest thing, says the darnest thing, I'm tired, I'm stressed, I have a job, in that moment, I just don't have the emotional regulation. I don't have the humility. Yeah. I don't have the level of connection to the Holy Spirit that I need to parent like a man of God in that moment.
This was literally me yesterday, one child reacting in a certain way. Mm. My always go to pre-programmed response. while I'm literally one, felt like one side of my brain, like, this is not how I want to respond. I know this is not helpful.
It's like you're watching
her
yourself respond badly.
Yes. My body is extremely dysregulated. This is not what I want to do. While I'm like, other side of me is literally yelling at her. Like, and we just needed to get in the car and go run an errand. But I'm thinking, I can't be in the same car with her right now. Yes, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
What you're highlighting, Jean-Marc, is actually, I think it's really important, is very,
the
very
moments when where our emotional maturity is the same level as our 8-year-old.
Yes.
Well, I mean.
And yet we have the mental awareness that we shouldn't be doing that.
It's like, we know too much to just relax. So when it comes to this whole journey of wanting to walk with Jesus and wanting to help your kids.
And be a good dad or
yes,
mom.
And that is the truest desire. But what you're highlighting, I think, to just, you're giving everybody relief to go, oh, him too. Because I think we all struggle with that, but it's this false ideal that we can assume because you talk about this all the time. You wrote about it. So apparently you've got that mastered.
I must have it down.
You must have it down. But I think, to kind of peek behind the curtain in the best way to say, actually, it is such an ongoing process. It does not happen immediately. And you can actually be doing the wrong thing. And as you're doing the wrong thing, be noticing in the other half that you're doing the wrong thing and know that you're going to have to repair the whole night. And so I think I just appreciate you going there because I think that's actually the truest thing for many people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm writing about it because I'm bad at it, not good at it, you know? I mean, I'm not a sports guy, but, that saying that the B players make the best coaches. There's exceptions to every rule, but it's rare for like a Michael Jordan or somebody to be an amazing coach because often the most gifted players, it's too intuitive for them. And this doesn't mean they haven't spent tens of thousands of hours practicing.
Yes.
But there's a level of talent, genius, natural aptitude that makes it almost hard for them to spell it out for like a normal clumsy person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it's very common that like B-level players become like A-plus coaches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so if there's a spiritual formation equivalent of that, I'm not even a B-level player. I'm like a pass-fail, if we're lucky, person. And we laugh, but I mean, you guys know me like that.
Hey, we want to remind you about the Intentional Motherhood Retreat, October 3rd through 5th. Starts on a Thursday night, ends on a Saturday morning here in Bend, Oregon, where we live. Space is filling up quickly, but we do still have some spots left. We'd love for you to come join us. Mom, what else do they need to know?
Well, this retreat really lends itself towards bringing your friends and your family, your sister, your mom, whoever with you. It is an awful lot of fun. And remember that what we're teaching is not about how to be the perfect mom, but how to really respond to God so that He can do the spiritual formation in our lives that all of us are longing for.
Yeah, so to find out more or to register, click the link in our bio, and we can't wait to see you in October.
I always laugh at, we like to utilize Myers-Briggs as a personality theory. It's not true, but it's still helpful.
Yeah.
And you know,
you just said it's not true.
None of them are true. Enneagram's not true. It's not true. None of them are true, but they are at times helpful, not always. But I think anything that helps you with self-awareness, I'm mostly for.
Yeah.
But you know, Myers-Briggs has been around for decades based on Carl Jung's work originally. And so there's, you know, just lots of good information out there on it. And one of the fun things you can do with the Myers-Briggs, there's 16 different personality types with four letters, is you can Google your four-letter personality type and like famous movies or books, and they'll show you like which character you are or like.
Oh, yes.
Right. So my personality theory, which is a very rare, I'm like, the only thing rarer than me would be the female version of me, as far as like I'm a very small slice of the population. But I'm always like the supervillain.
weren't you the emperor in the Star Wars characters?
I'm not even Darth Vader, because we all kind of have a soft spot for Vader, and he comes around in the end. Yeah. And, like, there's a sweet father-son moment. I'm Emperor Palpatine. And In Harry Potter, I'm he who must not be named.
No, I didn't know that.
In Breaking Bad, I'm whatever the person's name is. Like, I am the evil, like, you Google historical, like, my, and it's basically all, like, the atheist writers, Ayn Rand, and then it's all the communist genocide people. It's Stalin, it's Lenin, it's, like, the people that slaughtered hundreds of millions in the name of creating utopia. Like, that's my personality. So, you know, the...
So, just a minor thing you're throwing on the table.
The point
here
is, like, if you know my wife, like, you know T.
Oh, yeah.
I think she's a deeply godly woman, a contemplative soul, spends huge amounts of time in prayer daily. But I think, like, in a hypothetical alternate multiverse where she wasn't a Christian, I think she'd still be a pretty relaxed and nice person.
I completely agree with you on that.
And I'm not a relaxed or a nice person. This is me on Jesus. This is me seriously following Jesus.
This is me on Jesus.
With a therapist. This is like, wow. And so, you know, I think we come to formation, or what some would call the inner journey, for one of two basic reasons, desire or pain. Mm-hmm. And desire is meaningful, like, because often the older we get, the more we realize that hedonism, external success, these things are just not, they do not satisfy. And we become more and more in touch with the desire I think all people have that we suppress, to just become a person of goodness and love. Mm-hmm. But I think most of us come to it through pain. I come to it through pain.
Absolutely.
You know,
me too.
The science is not exact, but some people say that 50% of your emotional disposition is just genetic. And, if that's true, I just did not. God bless mom and dad. They both seem pretty lovely, but I did not win the genetic. I got, like, some grandparent side of the family, and I won't name them. And so I am just not naturally kind or happy.
Hmm.
And that causes great damage in my marriage and my family.
Hmm.
And so my only hope, I mean, yeah, there are things like vulnerability and honesty and whatever, but my only hope is, like, a serious regimen of discipleship to Jesus that over a long period of time will not fix me or make me perfect, but can bring out something approximating what Christ would look like through my communist.
But on the note of regimen, though, on the note
Emperor
of regimen,
what would Emperor Palpatine
what
be
would
like
he do?
If he was a Jesus guy?
I think, you know? Well, he'd shock people into it's the spirit coming out of his fingers. Anyway, the one thing I was thinking, though, is, you know, you're talking about routine, you're talking about, you know, a regimen. I just love that when we got here today, you still had to work out, and I peeked out the window as I was getting water, and you were just emerging from the cold plunge like an angel.
Die hard cold plunge.
He's still doing it. He's still faithfully doing the regimen, because it's not just emotion.
Holistic approach to discipleship, bro.
Yes,
I have a holistic approach to discipleship.
No, and I know you, that's what I mean, in part I'm joking, because it was majestic. The sun was shining perfectly at the moment. It was just like, you're here, whatever you have of it.
Little Jesus and John Baptist
moment.
Whoa,
what's going on here? Yeah.
Oh
but
my God.
At the same time, I'm mentioning it to say it's not just, and maybe we can go into this just a tiny bit, but it's not just like sit and pray in a room. I mean, that's powerful. That needs to happen. It's not just a walk, although it's powerful. It needs to happen. Maybe give us a little bit of that, like you just kind of mentioned, but tease that out a little bit, because you're talking about like the holistic approach. I think some people just often do the religious thing without like acknowledging the whole other part of their psyche, their body, their soul.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, gosh, there's hours of conversation here, but yeah, I mean, part of where that evangelical kind of false assumption about just more Bible study will equal high spiritual maturity. And again, do not hear that as a diss on Bible study. It's not. It's a that and.
It's a, that's a one piece.
And
to the puzzle.
Huge, entire swaths of the church that never offer anything beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
So that comes out of, evangelicalism comes out of two places historically. This is, again, an oversimplification. One, it comes out of the Enlightenment. Mm. So you have all the, you know, the founding fathers were mostly Enlightenment thinkers. And the Enlightenment posited like a new anthropology, a new view of what a human being was as a rational kind of brain on legs. So there's all this emphasis in the Enlightenment thinkers on the rational brain. And even in Christian theology, there's this whole like view of the, and the image of God, the Imago Dei, meant that we have a rational brain, which is not at all what Genesis seems to mean by that.
Sure.
But that was the cultural zeitgeist, right? And so in this kind of false view of the human person, which is not biblical and it's not scientific, but it still lives on. It's like built into our education system in the West. in this model, you were kind of a brain on legs. You're almost like a computer and you just need to like put the right data in or the right software program in. Mm-hmm. And so the theory for change then becomes put new information into the brain and that will result in transformation. But the problem is that information is not the same thing as formation or transformation. Yes.
Amen.
And you can have, I mean, I know all sorts of things where my information is right, but my heart, my body, my automatic responses in my body, things are still wildly wrong, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a more biblical, more ancient, more historic kind of model of discipleship that, you know, incorporates some of the missing pieces of evangelicalism that, again, was based on enlightenment. And then the other major kind of historical influence was the Protestant Reformation, which comes at a really dark and ominous moment in the church. There's multiple other reformations in the Catholic side of the church. Luther didn't even intend to split off. But, you know, the church was so corrupt that most priests had never even read the Bible. And people were not even hearing the Bible in their native tongue at Mass each Sunday. And so Luther and Calvin and the Reformers like re-inject not just the Bible, but biblical teaching and preaching, which like almost in a new expository Bible teaching, which is really a new thing historically. It doesn't really exist in the church, even in the early church, how it does today. Comes in the Reformation. They redesign their churches. They move the altar off to the side. They put the pulpit down at the middle, right? They become these preaching boxes.
Yeah.
And they're re-injecting into the bloodstream of the church something that had been lost over time. It's a real gift. But what happens when you combine the Protestant hyper-emphasis and centrality of preaching and teaching the Bible with the Enlightenment's unbiblical view of the human person as a brain on legs, is you end up with this accidental false model of discipleship that says, just put the right Bible teaching into the brain.
Gosh.
People want to be great parents. We just need to teach them what the Bible says about parenting, which is a great place to start. So again, this could be so misconstrued as like somehow I'm down on biblical teaching. I'm not, I do this. No, I'm for this.
We hear you.
Yes.
Yeah.
So when you actually look at the biblical view of the human person, when you look at discipleship in the four gospels, like actual discipleship to Jesus, when you look at the New Testament, how the church was working this out, you notice, I mean, this is not information being deposited into brains on legs. And so I think several aspects that we need to re-bring back would be, you know, the role of what today is called habit, or Christians would call spiritual disciplines or practices that are all over the life of Jesus and his disciples. Bring back an embodied approach to discipleship. Jesus' approach to discipleship is very embodied, very grounded, very earthy. His parables, his teachings are very embodied. Bring back a relational approach to discipleship. Again, the radical individualism of the West, even the spiritual formation movement has done very little to correct radical individualism. It's often like, you know, all right, now introverts have a way to be with Jesus. And we're I'm going to be a strong proponent of silence and solitude and all of this, but it's often just run through the grid of like introverted wellness spirituality.
Yeah.
You're right.
And man, change, if there, whatever our theory of formation is, it is whatever it is, it's relational. Like we change through a relational process of healing with God and other people. So I think that's some of the work in this book, and with the other work I do, I'm trying to reincorporate practice, the body, community, or the relational kind of side of spirituality, and the emotions. Like we are not, you know, this is where the scientists have come along and said, listen, humans are actually wildly irrational creatures. And if you don't believe that, just have a child and watch how they use their brain to rationalize like just bizarre behavior. And then watch how you do it back to them.
Oh my gosh. Yep.
So, so I take a integrated, back to the cold plunge, and this could easily be disagreed with. And so I offer it, you know, just, I offer it not as, chapter and verse, but I take an integrated approach to discipleship. So in my mind, Jesus and the writings of the New Testament and scripture as a whole, but in particular the New Testament, that sets the telos of my spiritual journey. That's the boundaries. So I don't go outside of that in what I trust Jesus about sex, about money, about whether or not I should sustain my marriage, all these questions. Now, when I say I trust, I mean my desire is to trust and deepen my trust. All of us, you know, fall short of that. But those boundaries are set for me. Mm-hmm. And I don't need to go exploring outside those boundaries and testing moral theories. I have enough trust in Jesus to live by his wisdom and truth. So the boundaries, the kind of person I want to become, the commands of the New Testament show me this is my trajectory. This is what I'm aiming for. But I'm very happy to take an integrated approach to becoming that kind of a person. So for me, that would include reading the Bible every single day, practicing the classical spiritual disciplines, living in community, receiving the bread and the wine, worshiping Jesus on Sunday, practicing Sabbath, all of that. And, doing a cold plunge every day and doing cardio and not drinking coffee too much and taking supplements.
Dude, I was going to say, you've been taking care of your temple, bro. You're taking care of that temple.
Well, because you know, without going into it, I had this, you know, traumatic experience when I was 3 months old, not like from my parents, but where I either died or almost died of SIDS. And we've worked with two clinical psychologists and a psychiatrist, all these brain scans. Basically all agree that it permanently damaged my nervous system, put me into like fight or flight constantly. So even though I grew up in this beautiful home, it was just bizarre when this clinical psychologist was like, you realize that you're a trauma survivor. And I was like, what are you talking about? I have like my parents run a parenting ministry, you know? And he wasn't talking about that. He was talking about my nervous system.
Yeah.
Wow. So obviously fear, anxiety, fight or flight, this causes us to behave in wildly unloving ways. So again, I just don't have the right genetics to just be like, oh, be patient. Fathers, don't exasperate your children. That's the Ephesians line. Sure, I'll just stop exasperating my children.
My gosh.
Yeah. Try that when you have a nervous system that's like always turned up to 8 and then you have a stressful job and you have 3 teenagers and you're moving and da-da-da-da. So anything I can do to calm my nervous system, that's HIIT workouts, you know, 4 days a week and Sabbath and tea and calm magnesium at night and cold plunging and walking and bipedal motion and breath work. All of these things are all in service of, I want to obey Jesus' command. I want to love God with all my heart, soul, strength. And I want to love my neighbor as myself. And I have a holistic view of my person. I'm a body, I'm a soul. I mean, what's Andy Crouch's line? A heart, soul, mind, strength, complex, designed for love. That's what a human being is.
He was just on the podcast. He said,
oh, really?
Yeah. He just said something
one
recently.
Of my favorite people.
Oh, and I mean, the whole time, the interview, which obviously this will come out after that one's out, but the whole time, like anything, everything he says, you're just like, can we just go back?
Yeah, can we just go back and just replay that? Because that's a very,
has he talked to you about the whole theory of fire and glowing and how that plays into I'll let you listen. Essentially, it's just in brief. It's basically that one of the only natural things that glows.
Screens and fires. The part of our brain designed to look into a fire at night around in community. Yep.
You know, and we talked about that. And so if you're listening to the podcast now and you heard that one, you obviously, this is a quick throwback, but I mean, just to sit around and think about that concept alone, I was like, that's a very interesting perspective that I would have never picked up on, that naturally that is the only thing that we look at, but how mesmerizing is a fire? How engaging.
And to tie it right back into this conversation, how much do we say, I just need to look at my phone less? Like, I just need to try harder.
As
I just
willpower is an effective tool against addiction.
Yeah, not.
Well, I mean, that is actually part of, you know, you listed out, you mentioned it, but just maybe even a highlight, you said a losing strategy, willpower, more Bible study, the zap from heaven. You know, that's directly from your book. And you're highlighting that. I think you've gone into a lot of that. I have more questions, as I always will, but honey, I want to make sure, I'm sure you had one or two, but I didn't want to like just jump over
you.
No,
go for it.
Well, no, I'm just thinking of, you know, because this brings me the holistic piece. Thank you for going into that, because I think you're right. It's not just one thing. It's many things. And not only are you right, but you see that lived out. You only have to jump into that space for a little while to see the effectiveness of when you start highlighting all these different areas of your life,
how spirit.
It's huge. Mm-hmm. It changes a lot. But, you know, I know we also talk about this idea, and I know you've talked about this in different spaces, but I still think it needs to be talked about more, because the idea of spiritual formation, the idea of even like stage theory and walking with Jesus, like, you know, you've said in all sorts of different spaces, and I won't quote you directly, but the idea that, you know, like a lot of Christians are at stage whatever, I can't remember what stage it was exactly.
Never get past stage 3.
Like stage, right? Well, we'll let you go into it. But the idea that like, there's a lot of people like that are not fully understanding that there's actually more to grow in Jesus. There's actually more that he's inviting us into. Maybe just talk to us a little bit about that.
We have a new offering for you. If you would like to receive daily or weekly text messages and encouragement around parenting, marriage, with prayers and scriptures, click the link in the show notes and we would love to send those to you. Can't wait to connect more with you.
Yeah, I mean, stage theory is a Christian name. You know, it's a kind of like the secular concept of developmental psychology or, you know, theories of consciousness, levels of consciousness. But stage theory is the basic idea that are there stages? There are certainly life stages we go through, right? So there's this life arc of childhood, big adolescence, time. What people now call the Odyssey years that my oldest son's entering into, adulthood, midlife crisis, active retirement. Like there are these life stages, and our experience of Jesus and of discipleship and our own soul, our emotional experience of life, it's very different in these various stages and seasons of life. And so in the same way that there are kind of seasons of life that, you know, no two lives are the same, but there are some generalizations that some people's life just do not map onto the traditional kind of, you know, life arc. But most people's do at some level. And so, you know, I think the question that many wise people have asked for hundreds of years, long before us, is, are there seasons or even stages in the spiritual life arc of a person? And again, there's no chapter and verse. You can't go to the Bible and be like, okay, this, you know, Timothy chapter 4 gives a clear Western style linear essay about the four stages or whatever. So there's lots of different stage theories. There's some in scripture that are a bit vague, but are there. There's a bunch down through church history. There's a really common one from the early church. There's a bunch of new ones. And yes, the one that you're referring to that I like, and none of them are true. Again, that just needs to be said. None of them are capital T true.
Absolutely.
And I think every single one of them is helpful.
Yeah.
And again, you're not trying to, they're fraught with difficulties because, you know, if you, for example, if you see some six stage thing, you're like, oh crap, I'm only stage two or I'm stage six. You probably aren't, by the way, but then, you know, you're probably going to fall, you know, on a ditch on either side of the road in despair and self-defeat or pride and delusion, right? So there's dangers, but just because there are dangers along the path doesn't mean that it's not the right path to walk. And so one I really like is called The Critical Journey by two professors from Fuller Seminary. It's, you know, I don't know how old it is, 20 years old now. Robert Gulick and Janet Hagberg. You can go read their book if you want, or I've done teachings on it before. And they, you know, did this massive survey searching for a stage theory amongst Christians. And their question was, are there stages by which God develops his disciples into greater and greater levels of love? And they identified six stages, with the seventh kind of phenomenon they call the wall. And there's lots of conversations we could have about it. The point I normally bring up for discipleship stuff is they say that most Christians never in the West never mature beyond stage three. And part of that is because most churches don't offer any discipleship beyond stage three. And again, that's not to critique churches or people. It's just to say, oh, wow, I think there's a lot more out there than many of us realize or kind of see a path forward on. And again, parenting just brings you right to the edge of this stuff. Because you just you know, it's like I was chatting to a new friend recently, really brilliant and iconoclastic guy. And he was telling me every day, he's a fairly wealthy guy, and every day he puts a dollar in a mason jar in his closet for each one of his kids. And when they graduate and go off to college, he's going to hand it to them to pay for therapy.
Smart man.
And it sounds like we have an amazing family. And, you know, you get to that spot where you're like, oh, gosh, I see myself wounding my kids. I see myself messing up my kids. And I see myself bequeathing an inheritance to them and also passing along my deepest unhealthy coping mechanisms, my dysfunction, my, you know, my just deeply broken patterns of unloving behavior, fear-based behavior. I see myself giving them both. And I just want to give them as, I know there's no version where I give nothing good to them. I'm sorry, nothing bad to them. But man, I I want to be at least a net positive and hopefully a lot more than that. And so I think, you know, some of these stage theories can really help map yourself on the spiritual journey, and then can help you overlay it over just the life journey. Are you a young parent? Are you an empty nester? Are you a young couple thinking about, you know, starting to have children? You're all in different seasons of life.
Yeah.
And naming that season in order to better name what are the temptations, what are the dangers on this path at this stage, at this season, and what are the invitations of Jesus, you know? Yeah. So my son Jude just graduated from high school last week. He has a couple like clear, his path's going to be his own path. But you know, in that age between about 18 and 28, there's about four or five essential tasks that every human needs to do if they're going to become a human flourishing. Then he needs to find, you know, he needs to settle on his faith. He needs to find, you know, a vocation, a call in life. He needs to figure out who he is. He needs to build a life, you know, architecture that can kind of discipline all of his unrestrained chaotic desires. He just, he has several tasks set before him that take most people 10 years. Some people never even mature beyond that. You meet certain people that are 59 and they're still 21. They're just wandering around. They still don't know who they are, or what they do. They can't commit. They don't have a life architecture to discipline their passions, you know, unbridled passions. And so this stage is an, like he needs to go through this. And then there's going to come a stage where he's not going to have to think a lot about like, what commitments do I make long term? Because he's already made them. I've gotten married. I've had kids. I've whatever. What should I do with my life? I'm a whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So I think knowing where you're at can be really helpful. But there's like 8,000 caveats here that I don't have time for. You never really know where you're at. There's mystery and Jesus is the shepherd. We're the sheep. And
I think you do a really great job in your book laying all that out, drawing it out. So I think for anybody listening who's interested in that, go buy your book. You do a great job laying it out. As you're talking, though, I just keep thinking to the person listening. I want you to speak to this hypothetical person. If someone's listening and they maybe they have a couple kids at home.
Yeah.
And they're starting to feel like what we've already talked about and described is like, man, I'm starting to really see who I am. Like marriage and kids will really bring things to the surface that you didn't even know was there before.
Totally.
Maybe you're starting to see it. You're hearing all this stuff about spiritual practices, spiritual formation. They're following, practicing the way. And the enemy is using it to make them feel like a total failure. Like, how in the world do I integrate all of this into my actual life when it feels like my kids are keeping me from it, and yet I'm not becoming the person I want to be? Like you say in the book, don't fight against your season, work with it.
Yes.
Like, what would you say to that parent? Because I think that is the common place, at least the parents I talk to, that's the common place they find themselves. And I think the enemy wants to get us to not even try, to give up before we've even done anything, and to just continue in the cycle of, I see the problem, I don't feel like I have the energy to change it, and to keep us stuck there and not moving on to another stage, not trying anything different to actually like dig us out of the pattern we find ourselves in. What would you say to that person?
If you're enjoying this content and you want to go deeper, we have an amazing resource that we want to tell you about. It's the Intentional Film Series, Raising Passionate Jesus Followers. Now, this is an incredible tool for you for spiritual formation in the family. And we created this film series to help parents in their God-given task to raise and disciple their own children. Now, our hope is that we're able to help you and give you some of the tools that I know we so desperately need as we're in the process of raising our kids, and Phil and Diane have actually raised their kids. This is a 9-session film series on the process of what raising a passionate Jesus follower actually looks like. There's some workable solutions in here. There's a bunch of wisdom from the scriptures, and there's a bunch of practical help in your journey as you are raising your children. We cover all sorts of things like parental roles, goals versus values. What is discipline versus punishment? How do I create a heart of obedience in my child where they actually want to obey? What does a heart of self-control look like? Or how do I even help my child in the process of character development? We cover that and so many more things. You can use this film series in a variety of ways. You can use it at your home, preferably with your spouse if that's applicable, with a group of friends or in your community, or even through your local church. All you need to do is head over to our website, intentionalparents.org, click on film series, and then follow the prompts.
We have a bunch of other resources there that you can check out, but we do pray that this blesses you in your pursuit of raising passionate Jesus followers.
I mean, I would start by asking a lot of questions.
Yeah.
And no two people are the same. There certainly are patterns I see in the kind of overwhelmed parent who, you know, hears a call to discipleship and it has the opposite effect on them of just driving them into shame or overwhelm or why even try? Let's just, you know, watch Gilmore Girls and eat ice cream.
Great.
I mean, it does feel good.
But I think at a generalization level, most parents are operating from a joy deficit and a place of exhaustion. And so I think any journey into serious spiritual formation and growth through these years needs to begin with filling your joy bucket and with really prioritizing rest. And I think that's where you start. You start with rest and you start with building joy, not with, you know, doing 25 more spiritual disciplines and really important things like serving the poor and practicing hospitality to your non-Christian neighbors. These are all really important things. But you don't start there. You start with Sabbath, rest, sleep. Start with sleep before you even get to Sabbath. You start with sleep. And the reason that a lot of this is really hard is any talk of formation, any talk of spiritual practices will bring up resistance in your heart. And so you'll notice people have these emotional reactions and people very quickly will spin out a narrative of why they can't do it. And sometimes that's because a heavy burden is being put on them, you know, that Jesus would have words about. He said that a lot of things to the Pharisees, and I'm sure I've been guilty of that at times. But sometimes it's because this invitation of Jesus to say, keep Sabbath, is hitting some kind of resistance. And it's just really good to non-judgmentally explore in prayer with close friends, with your spouse, partner, like, where's that resistance coming from? So if you hear the idea of Sabbath and just write it off, where's that resistance coming from? Is it coming from an addiction to shopping or TV as your pain coping mechanism and you can't even fathom a world? Is it coming from your kids need to like have the sports life that you never could have. And so you can't Sabbath because they need to go out like on the top club team for soccer. And what's there? Is it coming from some kind of my worth comes from what I do and accomplish? Is it comes from like you have such chronic activity and busyness in your life that actually it's how you push away the sad feelings? So again, it could be none of that, but that stuff is in tons of people. And the disciplines in particular are some of the ones that actually are less about doing and more about not doing, which is where I think most exhausted joy deficit people need to start. So this is Sabbath, it's sleep, it's solitude, it's simplifying, learning to say no. These like the space that then becomes a part of your life, margin, often the first thing that comes up is pain.
Anxiety.
Stuff you've been running from, anxiety, difficult feelings, shame, family of origin stuff, self-worth stuff. You know, Thomas Keating had this really brilliant insight where he said, when we come to quiet before God, and in context, this was in his writing on contemplative prayer, he said, the first thing that comes up is what he called the unloading of the unconscious. And what he means is basically all the stuff that we have pressed down through watching Netflix late at night and being on Instagram 29 times a day and text messaging and emailing our boss at whatever hour and going to soccer practice and hanging out with other moms and all the things we do, not necessarily bad things. Some of them aren't very healthy, but not necessarily bad. Like when we clear all of that away, like all of this stuff often comes up. And that's why people A, don't go there, or B, go there and stuff comes up and feel like a failure and like, I'm never doing that again. Well, people don't realize if you just stay with the process, it comes up and then it goes away. And not like in an easy formulaic way, but there is a general like pattern of like this stuff comes up in the safe place, prayer, rest, community. You work through it with Jesus. You begin to experience some healing. You can't do this all alone. You have to do this in community and with older, wiser people. And then it begins to work its way out of your life. And you begin to get kind of an emotional release and you can kind of move to the next thing. And so I think for most parents, man, like why just maybe make a list of all the reasons that you may feel are really valid that you can't say, keep Sabbath, or you can't practice a, even if it's for 10 minutes, some time of daily contemplative moment in silence, or you can't, you know, prioritize deep relational connection, whatever that living in community would look like. Just make a list of your reasons. I can't do it because of this. I can't do it. And then just non-judgmentally in prayer and in, or in conversation with your friends or spouse, just hold that list before God. Because some of those reasons may be invitations for you to explore stuff that's deeper. We all get into this kind of act of self-betrayal or self-sabotage where we might desire genuinely, I want to be a well-rested, joyful parent. But then when we're presented with a pathway to becoming that kind of a person and pragmatic steps, we do these weird, irrational things that then sabotage us becoming that. It's not rational because we're not all that rational. And so if you can name some of that, it's really important. But I just think most people are too exhausted and worn down emotionally to really go on any, you know, joy is God. The joy of the Lord is your strength. Joy has to be the lodestone that moves us forward. It's got to be the wind in our sails. It's got to be, I love God. I desire to be with God and to become a person of love like God and receive more of his love, to give more of his love. Like that joyful desire, unforced, that's got to be the what is guiding our spiritual journey. Not duty, obligation, shame, guilt, you know, it's the right thing to do. Those, that's not all bad. Like, you know, doing things for duty-based motivation is fine, but it's not going to get you very far.
No, it's not going
to
keep you.
So, I think the first thing I would say to people is go to bed, turn off your freaking TV, throw your phone away, take a digital Sabbath once a week, sleep, Sabbath. Spend at least 10 minutes a day just quietly sitting with God and letting him love you or praying a psalm. Prioritize really deep, meaningful relationships that can help you carry the weight of this season of life. And then kind of just take it one step from there, you know? And the other thing that's so beautiful about the stage of parenting is if you can just bring enough basic life architecture of discipleship to your parenting years, parenting will do 90% of the heavy lifting in your formation.
Yes, and amen.
You know, Rollheiser in Domestic Monastery, which I'm sure you guys talk about, every young parent should read that book.
Takes
about 30 minutes to read it, so it's perfect for young parents. And he tells that story about Carlo, or I forget his last name, but his famous Italian hermit monk who went into a hermitage for 30 years to meditate and pray and be transformed and came back and spent time with his Italian mom of six, who had spent the last 30 years raising six children, and realized that not only was she more loving than he was, she was also more contemplative than he was.
I love that so much.
He went into a hermitage for 30 years. She just raised kids for 30 years. And so, you know, Rollheiser's point is your children can be your monastery. Your children at some level can be your discipleship pathway. But that does not mean... So just get up in the morning and check your phone and turn on SpongeBob and make cereal and just hope that you do that for 10 years and you'll become really godly. You might do that for 10 years and become bitter and exhausted and go through a divorce and come to hate your children. Like, that's no guarantee.
No.
You still have to bring a modicum of life discipleship to Jesus where you follow some of the practices of Jesus as is healthy through your season of life. And the enemy will target rest. I think people don't realize rest is so powerful because it's the first step toward becoming a person of love. So 80% of my bad things I do as a dad are just because I'm tired and stressed. So that's like really I am a categorically better parent on vacation.
Interesting.
And that's because I'm blessed, not stressed, baby. And I'm rested. And I'm not a perfect parent. I still have issues. I still have chronic dysfunction. I still have generational sin that I'm carry forward and I can't kick. But I am a categorically better dad on vacation.
Rest.
And that's because my life is too stressful and exhausting. And some of that can be changed. Some of it can't. You just have to swallow your season and persevere and develop, you know, a strong muscle to persevere. But I think the enemy comes against our rest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he'll bring lies into your mind. He'll bring false excuses. He'll bring distractions. He'll bring temptation.
Mm.
And especially like what we think of as non-moral temptation. It might just be the temptation to be on your phone all the time, or mm-hmm. be on TikTok, or watch TV, or go shopping, or stay out, or drink too much. Like these things that we don't even think of as like sins.
Yeah.
But they may be keeping you from rest. And And your exhaustion is keeping you from being a person of love and joy and peace. Mm. So that's why I am so committed to unhurry, to slowing down, to Sabbath. Some people will maybe rightly criticize me as like, well, it's just Christian self-help. And I think they profoundly misunderstand my motivation.
Mm.
My motivation is not just emotional wellness, though I think actually that emotional health is vital to becoming a person of love. My motivation is I am Emperor Palpatine trying to become like Jesus. And listen, Emperor Palpatine probably needed to like take a nap and go for a jog and
cold plunge, dude.
Do some cold plunges and have some close friends that he could just bare his soul to and keep Sabbath and turn off his, you know, Death Star computer for a day each week and just be a soul and go hiking in the woods of Endor.
Mm.
And, you know, he still would have been him, but he probably would have been a little less, you know,
a little bit
killing people right and left.
Well, the hard part about this interview, and I knew it would be, is like, where do we stop, right? Like, how do we end this? But I was just going to say, I think what you just said is a perfect place to just give people not only perspective, but hope. And it's just some real tangibles, like start there. And the things that you just gave us, you gave anybody listening, is completely realistic.
Yeah.
It is completely doable. And it's encouraging to hear from your perspective, the effectiveness. And even as you sit in this stuff and process it and have had time yourself and to walk with others through it, to see that this isn't something that you're just saying from a place of like, well, this is what this book says. It's lived experience. And we know that. Like, the person that you've actually become is so different than 20 years ago, 10 years ago, right? You are, in every way that you can, you are growing and changing, and Jesus is doing that in you. And I know that you're still very aware of the areas that need improvement, but at the very same time.
As are my children.
Yeah. As is anybody close to us in any situation, but we couldn't be more happy with our time. And I just want to say thank you for depositing into Elizabeth and I, as you always do.
Yeah.
You're always such a kind human friend, brother,
it's
to do
joy
that.
Joy to be with you.
Yeah.
But can I say one last thing?
Please. Take us away.
It's so funny. I only said yes to this podcast because I love you and I believe in intentional parenting ministry. But I feel like, man, I do not have the spiritual authority to come on a parenting podcast and tell you how to do it.
Welcome to the club.
It's a weak point in my life, not a strength. But I am really sensitive to something I see a lot of in the church, which is just a profound lack of, I mean, frankly, humility, but spiritual realism around how hard marriage, parenting, and other stuff is.
Yes, sir.
And I think what happens is a lot of people that maybe won the genetic lottery and ended up in a great marriage fit and great home with
neurotypical kids who
are getting great grades and whatever.
Yeah.
They think that their success is because of their formula, and often it's in spite of their formula. And again, I'm maybe a little jealous, but I'm grateful for these people. But I just was in an experience last week where I was with somebody who probably is a phenomenal parent. That was my impression. But man, it was just positive story after positive story about how they're the best parent and they handled this perfectly and this is how you should handle it. There's no weakness.
Oh,
I'm like, no vulnerability, no theology of weakness. I'm like, man, I'm sure you are way better dad than I am, but you can't be that good.
You can't
good.
Get it right every
there's
time.
I know humans pretty well. You're not that. You're good. I'm sure you're good and I'm sure you're way better than me, but you can't be that good.
Mm.
And then I was so refreshed. I do email once a week, and I was plowing through my email earlier this morning. I got an email from Pete and Gary Scazzaro, and they were doing a podcast on emotionally healthy parenting. And they just had the best little paragraph. And they basically said, parenting is one of the most difficult things you'll ever do. And you know what? There's so much unrealistic stuff out there on parenting. And they said, just try to move in the right direction toward becoming a better parent.
Yes.
And I was like, that's success. Just move in the general direction.
Yeah.
That's success.
Yes.
And it's not like reaching some level or having this perfect rule of life or having this Instagram worthy, you know, family brand.
No.
It's just move in the right direction.
Yeah.
And that means, you know, I love Emily Freeman's popularization of the do the next right thing.
Yes.
Line.
Yes, yeah.
Just do the next right thing. You know, yeah. I say a lot with formation, start where you are, not where you quote should be, and do what you can, not what you can't. Mm. So yeah. If you're like, well, because of this and soccer and our work schedule, we can't do a full 24-hour Sabbath and turn our phone mm-hmm. and devices. Yeah. Okay. Can you do 4 hours?
Yeah.
On a Saturday morning or Sunday afternoon? Just start where you can. You do 2 hours? Like, yeah. Can you do it something? Start, well, I can't take my phone away from my teenager because it's okay. Can you like turn the internet off at 8 p.m. in your house or something? Like, yeah. What can you do? Even if yeah. it's really small yeah. and it's not heroic or nobody's going to write books about it, but just do what you can and yeah. move in the direction and let every day just, and not just until our kids are gone. And I think I love that about mom and dad. They're yeah. trying to grow as parents in their 70s, yes. you know? Mm-hmm. Just move in yeah. the direction toward being an emotionally healthy parent, toward mm-hmm. being a prayerful, contemplative parent, toward being a person of love and joy and mm. peace. And I think the more seriously you take this journey into becoming a person of love, the more you will find yourself falling on the mercy of God.
Yes.
Because you yeah. will realize your utter incapability of doing it in your own mm. willpower.
Yeah.
Yes.
And no matter how much knowledge or books you read or podcasts you listen to, you will realize, wow, I need to be saved.
Yes. Mm.
And that is humbling and liberating.
Yeah. Yes.
And if you can make peace with that and learn to keep short accounts, not just with your children or your spouse, but with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And learn wow, to cool. recover quickly from your sin
mm.
and quickly turn around to do all that God has for you to do and just quickly get up and peacefully mm. get back on the path. I think that is what Jesus would have mm. for us.
Yeah.
I think that whole section of what you just said, just everybody hit the 30-second back button a couple times yeah. and just let that sink in. And once it gets through, hit it a couple more times. Truly thank you. That is mm-hmm. a huge deposit perspective. If anybody was encouraged by today, you can check out Practicing the Way. That's where you're doing a lot of work right now.
Yes.
Releasing mm-hmm. a ton of great stuff there.
That's you just could run the Sabbath practice 4 weeks long, talk absolutely. About doing it in community, how to do it with kids,
yes.
Sabbath feast, make a party,
and that was
make
actually
fun.
Kind of, I wanted to say, like, you have so many practical things on there. So check yeah. that out. It's a great resource.
Free.
What it gets, a free resource. That's yeah. a great highlight. And then your books, then any and johnmarkcomer.com.
Not people, free.
The books aren't free.
The books are not free.
But the books you can get.
Unless if you're Moses and he doesn't want the gift.
Yeah. I will never forget that. I just love that. Yeah, my dad probably just wants me to know what he's doing. It was the
yes,
best.
Yes, Moses. I do. I read a Robert Bly book.
But we will we'll definitely thank you. We'll see you at Camp Comer.
Can't
it's going to be in a couple weeks. Can't
weeks
wait.
Away.
It's something we do all the time. We love it. Anything from you, sweetheart?
No, just thank you.
Love you both.
That last part.
So much respect for you. You guys are the real, you are amazing parents, not perfect parents, but amazing
perfect.
Parents. And the fact that you understand that with humility just goes to what extraordinary people you are. I'm so glad you're giving your life to this work. It's deeply needed and many of us are the beneficiaries. So
thank you.
Bless you both. Let's go make some dinner and
yes.
yes.
sit outside
yes,
and
please.
Eat.
That's a wrap.